Rails Coach Podcast, Episode 11, Testing Your Application. Hey everybody, and welcome back to the Rails Coach Podcast. This is your host, Charles Max Wood, and this week we're going to be talking about testing. We're going to talk about what you test, why you test, and why it isn't just QA's job to get the tests written. Before we get started, I'd just like to remind you that you can leave feedback for the show. You can do that by calling 801-753-8279 or emailing podcast@railscoach.com. You can also email in audio files that you record on your computer or on your iPod, and I'll play them back on the show. I'd also like to remind you that if you go to railscoach.com/survey, you can give some feedback on the show. Specifically, what I'm looking for is suggestions of people that you would be interested in hearing from, as well as topics you'd like me to discuss, and just, you know, which episodes you prefer, or what type of episodes you prefer. Now, I may have mentioned last week that this week was going to be the interview with Chad Fowler, but it turns out that he was delayed getting back home, and since tomorrow's my wedding anniversary and the weekend didn't really work for either of us, we're going to have to postpone that interview. So if you were expecting that, I apologize, and we will definitely work out things so that we can get that out as soon as possible. I'd also like to give a shout out to anybody who's going to Mountain West RubyConf next week. That's on March 11th and 12th. I will be there. I only live 45 minutes away from where it's going to be held, so you know it's local, and it was terrific last year, so I'm looking forward to that. All right, so let's go ahead and get into testing your application. Let's discuss first of all what testing is. I think a lot of people think testing is, you know, is kind of the job for somebody else. You know, they write code and somebody else will write tests and make sure it all works, and then they'll report the bugs back. And you know, to a certain degree, that is true, but testing is also the responsibility of the developer. When I was in QA, I have to say that the developer written tests usually mitigated more bugs than our efforts did, and that happened for a couple of reasons. One is that the developers know the code way better than the QA personnel do. It's just you know, you can understand that. It's like reading somebody else's code. You know, it just you know, they can maintain it better than you can, and you know, sometimes it's appropriate that you wind up maintaining somebody else's code, but ultimately then you face a learning curve that they don't have to face. So if they wrote tests, then you know that their code wrote as they expected it to work, which is very, very nice. So, you know, that's part of the reason why we should test. Basically, when I think about why we should test, I think about three main reasons why we should test. I wrote five reasons to do test-driven development or test, what is it, the other TDD, test-driven or... Anyway, I'll put a link to that post in my blog, but I'm not going to talk about test-driven development today. I'm just talking about testing in general and why we should do it. So the first reason is so that you know your code works the way that you expect it to. In this way, it's kind of like a specification, you know. If you have a good project manager or if you have a good client that's providing you a good set of requirements, then you know what the code is supposed to do. You know, you have specified when a customer does this, when a client or when a user does this, then you get this result. You know, and so you know what's supposed to go on. But in a lot of cases, you know, if you write your tests to match up with the specifications, then you know you got everything done, and you know it works as expected. So I mean, that's definitely one reason to write tests. Another reason is, and this is something that you find as your application grows and gets more complicated, is that when you change something, you know, especially in Ruby on Rails, the lowest common denominator is the data, the model. And so in any other application too, you know, if you're getting down into your data, your database, and you change the schema or change the way that your basic level objects act, then, you know, you want to make sure that you didn't break something that's upstream from that. You want to make sure that it all works. And so if you have these tests in place, then you really get the payoff of knowing, okay, you know, these tests, they work great. They pass. They do what they're supposed to do. And, you know, I made this change to this method or this function, and I know for a fact that the code still works as expected, which is important because, you know, if you have somebody else coming in later on to maintain your code, you know, again, you know, they may not understand some of the complexities and may wind up breaking something. And if you have tests written, if you have a test suite that they can run after they make their changes, then they know that they didn't break your code. Obviously, then it's okay to change your tests as your requirements change in your application. The final reason is that it documents your code. Now, the most pertinent example of this is in libraries. There are a lot of libraries in Ruby. They usually come packaged as gems through Ruby gems, and I may talk about package management and stuff later on. But anyway, so you have this library and you're trying to figure out how to use it, and you start looking for documentation. Well, the documentation you find may just be written such that it kind of tells you what this method does or that method does or this other method does, but it doesn't really show you how to do whatever it is that you want to do with this library. So if you need to parse something or, you know, read in something from a file or, you know, do something more complicated than that or connect to an API, for example, you know, you may be better served by looking at a test that connects in and runs a certain part of the API. And if you look at the test and you look what they're calling and what they're expecting back, you know, sometimes you can get a better idea of what these things do and what parameters you can hand to the method or object and what response you're going to get back. And so in a lot of cases, it really helps to document the code. And obviously, the most relevant documentation for the code is the code. But in a lot of cases, I found that tests are a close second. And if you have good test coverage, then you know what it does. And, you know when you go back in and try and interact with the code that it does what you expect it to, because you have a test that tests that it does what it's expected to do. All right, so let's get into why this is your job and not QA's job. I've had the good fortune of working with a couple of really solid QA people, both in when I was in QA and as a developer. And currently, I work with probably one of the better QA people that I've worked with. And you know, the QA people I work with now really aren't coders. You know, so they're doing a lot of black box testing. And just for the new people to testing in this terminology, black box testing means that you don't see the internals, you don't see the code, you don't know how it does what it does, but you know if you put something in, then you get something back out. And this can be both behavior and data. And so what I mean by this is, you know, if you fill out a form to enter some information and you click submit or save, then behavior is that on the back end, it gets saved into some database. And, you know, the data is that it may display that data back to you. And so you're testing both things. You know, you're testing that you can retrieve it because it's a black box. Obviously, you can't see into the database and go, okay, it's in the database. You know, but in black box testing, you can test that, okay, I did this and now I can exhibit this other behavior where if I go to look up the information I just put in, that I can find it. So you treat it as a black box. You know, you make your request, you get data back. And that's part of the behavior. With white box testing, you can see the internals. You know what's going on in there. And so usually this is more code level tests. This is stuff that you're going to write that, you know, you call this method. And, you know, and again, you're testing behavior and data. You're testing what you get back. You're testing what it does. So what you're going to do is you're going to write a test. I'm just going to give an example from Ruby on Rails again. Let's say you have a controller, which, you know, if you don't quite understand what the controller is, it kind of, after the routing, which basically takes the request and sends it to the appropriate controller, the controller brokers the request, makes the appropriate calls, you know, fulfills whatever logic it needs to do by connecting to the models, and then returns the information to you through a view. It's a model view controller framework in Ruby on Rails. Anyway, so if you want to test a particular action, which is just a method on your controller that handles a particular request, then what happens is you go in and you'll write your test. And there's a really good video on PeepCode if you're interested in learning about this testing controllers in Ruby on Rails. But the idea is you know, you basically fake a request to the controller, and then the controller, you know, executes the request. And then what happens is you test all of the variables that are set coming out of it. And, you know, you can also test the response through the view, or if it returns text or XML or something else, then you can parse that and, you know, verify that what you're getting back is what you expect. So, you know, that's more code level. You know, your QA people typically aren't going to do that kind of testing for you. You know, sometimes you do split that up and you get QA people that are, you know, developers effectively and are programming these kinds of tests. But generally, if you have QA people, they're more interested in hitting your application the same way your users or customers do, and verifying that the behavior is what they expect. Where, you know, you're going to get into a deeper level and really write tests that pinpoint where in your code the problems may occur. So, you know, that kind of answers two questions. It answers, well, why do I test, and, you know, as opposed to QA, and it also talks a little bit about what you test. Now, there are a few tricks and tools out there that you will find as you get into testing that really help make your tests simpler. And there are certain levels of tests. Now, in my experience, you'll find that the most common tests that developers write are unit tests. And unit tests are tests that test one particular method or one particular area of functionality within a specific class. And I'm speaking very object-oriented and Ruby-centric right now, but it shouldn't be too foreign to you if you've written anything else. If you've written in C, a unit test tests a particular function. If you're right, and C is an object-oriented, obviously. You know, so you have different levels of tests. So, you know, and you may have multiple tests that test multiple code paths through a particular function or method. You also have functional tests. And typically, functional tests are a little bit further removed. They may test a collection of a functionality. In Ruby on Rails, you typically see these on the controllers, though they look a lot like unit tests, and it really depends on the amount of logic and things like that that are handled in the controller. You know, and honestly, in a lot of cases, I've seen them called functional tests when they're more or less unit tests. And then you have integration tests. And the integration tests typically test the entire system. So as an example, you have these different layers of functionality in Ruby on Rails. You have a controller which may connect to a model. You have a model that connects to the database. And the database, you know, we'll serve the data back to the model, and the model will serve the data. You know, it'll do its job and operate on that data and give it back to the controller, and the controller will pass it out to the view. So your integration test will test all of those layers. It'll make the request, send it through the routing. The routing will put it through to the right controller. The controller will do whatever it needs to do, get the information from the model, and then it'll push it out to the view, or operate on the data and then push it out to the view, and push a response out to the view, excuse me. So, you know, your integration is top to bottom. Your integration tests. And your unit tests are usually just one method or one function specific. One of the tools that really help simplify this is mocking and stubbing. I could do a whole podcast on just mocking and stubbing, but I'm just going to give you the basics, and then we can kind of go ahead from there and talk about mocking and stubbing possibly in another episode. But the basics of mocking and stubbing are, mocking is basically creating an object that looks and acts just like the real thing. And that it's not a very good description. Let me give you an example. So you have a model in Ruby on Rails, or just a class. You know, let's just talk object-oriented for a minute. So let's say we have a class, and your class is car. And so car does a whole bunch of things. It, you know, it can drive forward, drive backward, has certain attributes to it. A mock object is something that looks and acts a lot like a car. So it has the required functionality of a car for our tests. So if we are testing some measurement of speed, for example, then what we may have in our mock car is only accelerate and decelerate, or accelerate and brake, you know, and move forward, move backward, things like that, you know, that involve speed. So then what we do is we go ahead and we write our tests against the mock car. And the reason we do it against the mock car is that we're not really interested in the car. We're interested in the speed. And so as long as we have some object that moves at a certain speed, then we know that then we can test our car. And so it helps us isolate our tests without worrying about whether or not car works properly. As long as the mock car can give us back the right information, then we can test the functionality around speed without worrying about the specifics of car. Now, one other thing that we see is stubbing. And stubbing is like mocking, except it's on a particular piece of functionality. You usually stub out methods on an object. So, for example, if you have a car, let's say we have a class car again. And when you create a new car, you know, it instantiates a new tires, a new windshield, new doors, new windshield wipers. And so what you can do is, rather than mocking out all those things, or as a part of mocking out all those things, you stub the method that creates new tires, so that it gives you back a mock object instead of an actual tire object. And so in tandem, what happens is, as you mock out this, you know, create new tire, then what happens is you get back the mock object. And so then you don't care about tires, you know, you just care about moving forward with the car. And then if there's a bug in tires, then that'll show up in your tires test and not give you false positives in your car's test. And that's really the basics of stubbing and mocking, and there's a whole lot of other stuff that people have written and done about it. But at the basic level, if you can come to kind of grasp that, it simplifies your tests and it usually speeds them up. And that's something that has become very, very useful to me over the last year or so. I don't know that there's a whole lot else to add. I really encourage you, if you're not writing tests for your code, to find a way to do it. I've been doing it for quite a while here with my Ruby and Ruby on Rails projects, and it winds up saving me a ton of time. even though, you know, I spend the time writing the tests, later on down the road, I don't have the aggravating problems of tracking down bugs that I don't have tests for. And then if you run into a bug, what you can do is you can actually write a test that will isolate whatever bug you're tracking down. So, you know, at the very least, if you don't have a test that specifies the bug that you're hunting, you can eliminate all the things that you have tested and write tests that test new things that show you where the problems lie in your code. And that's a very effective way to answer questions about problems in your code. So anyway, thanks for listening, and come back next week. Also, make sure that you go and take the survey, railscoach.com/survey, and give us some feedback. Let us know what you think, and we'll catch you next week.